Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. It's Bill Bartholomew here with you for new episodes every Tuesday and Friday. And of course, our back catalog of nearly 300 episodes available anytime on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, ripodcast.com, or wherever you like to listen. Today, we have an interesting conversation with Chris Palmieri. Now, he's the president and CEO of Commonwealth Care Alliance. And what we're going to get into is an innovative approach to healthcare that was basically spawned during COVID-19. And Commonwealth Care Alliance, CCA as they're known, they've already started to set up shop here in Rhode Island. They're Massachusetts based. And I think you'll be interested to hear some of the programs and operations that they engaged with during COVID-19 that sort of, as with many aspects of not only the healthcare industry, but I think, frankly, industry at large, focused on innovation, focused on new approaches to solving age-old problems when it comes to equity, when it comes to access, when it comes to engagement. So stick around. We're going to take a look at Commonwealth Care Alliance's approach to managing COVID from the insurer's side, and some other people, well, they might be able to take a page out of their book, frankly, when it comes to dealing with something, not only COVID, but look, we learned so much about the false notion that we have equity in healthcare during COVID. There probably has not been a more poignant example of that ever that I can think of. By the way, if you want to support the independent journalism, analysis, opinion, and entertainment that B-Town has become known for, well, a great way to do so is to become a B-Town insider through our Patreon page. You can click the support link wherever you're listening right now, or simply head to patreon.com, patreon.com/BartholomewTown, where for as little as $3 per month, you can help to sustain the bedrock of this operation. Independent journalism right here in Rhode Island, and for you and by you. Because I'm not spending any money on advertising or any of that nonsense. It's all word of mouth. And I couldn't thank you enough for spreading the word of Bartholomew Town and getting this thing to become what it has over the past few years. Okay, let's get to it. Chris Palmieri, CCA. Let's find out what they've been up to. All right, so we are here today. We're talking with Chris Palmieri of Commonwealth Care Alliance. And I guess, first of all, welcome to the show and welcome to Rhode Island. If you kind of want to just set up for us who you are and what you do on the most basic level, and we'll go from there.
That's great, Bill. Thanks. And I'm so happy to be joining you today. So Commonwealth Care Alliance has been around since 1976, was founded in Boston, Massachusetts. We today are an integrated care system that influences models of care that are really innovative and serve complex populations. We're a nonprofit. We still consider ourselves a community-based provider as well as payer, even though we are statewide in Massachusetts. And now, as you foreshadowed, planning to enter Rhode Island later this year, we serve consumers that have significant health needs. And we have an uncommon model of care, which is how we approach providing effective services to address unmet social determinants of health, people's behavioral health needs, as well as, of course, their medical needs. And today in Massachusetts, we serve over 40,000 individuals that meet that definition. And we currently employ over 1,500 individuals, which is a combination of clinical folks as well as folks that are working on the administrative side of our organization.
How would you describe or compare and contrast from some of the household name players in this industry, at least in Rhode Island, sort of your approach to managing and delivering care?
Yeah, so the first thing I would say is that we say that, and we act on the premise that we put the consumer at the center of everything, and we put them first. And as I said earlier, we look at an individual as a whole person, and we think about their health and well-being from both what their behavioral health needs are, what their environmental needs are. We want to keep people living and thriving in their communities. And then we also think about their medical needs. We do this through what we believe is an innovative way to coordinate, provide, and pay for all of the things that would help somebody be as healthy as they can be, living their best life at home. So that's sort of what I think is different. And again, what sort of puts this into practice is today in Massachusetts, we have nearly 1,000 people that are out in the communities serving our beneficiaries. And of course, the world looks a little bit different today because we're still in a social distancing COVID and hopefully soon COVID ending environment. But now we access our members and we continue to go to their homes, and we've done it throughout the pandemic. But we also have a virtual care platform, which allows us to reach our members telephonically using video conferencing and a variety of channels to get to them when you can't as easily walk into someone's living room and have a face-to-face conversation.
That's really interesting. I mean, that's in a way going to be your calling card that separates you from competition, frankly, here in the state. What else has sort of contributed to your growth in terms of the individuals that you serve as an organization and also the workforce that you employ? And you expect to be able to sort of translate that in both senses, workforce and obviously the individuals you serve in the Ocean State?
You know, I hope we can, and I think we can, frankly. When I came to Commonwealth Care Alliance just over 5 years ago, we only employed 680 people, and we've added nearly 1,000 positions as our company has grown. Mm. And these are great, great job opportunities for people that are really looking to practice our care model and believe in the mission. Today in Massachusetts, we have two discrete populations that we focus on. The first is those that are 21 to 64 that are both Medicare and Medicaid eligible. And to get Medicare without being over the age of 65, you have to have a qualifying physical disability or major mental illness. In that program, we've been one of the top rated health plans in the United States. In fact, based on a specific CAHPS measure or consumer assessment of healthcare providers and systems. We were the number one rated health plan in the United States 2016, 2017, 2018, and we're in the top five in 2019. We're really proud of that. Our other program, which is for individuals that also have Medicare and Medicaid and are over the age of 65, and this is our sort of the program that we created ourselves as an insurance company back in 2003 on, is a program that has 4.5 out of 5 stars based on the CMS rating of health plans. And we're extremely proud of that as well. And, you know, with both of these programs and what I hope will, first of all, get those quality rankings and consumer rankings when we come to Rhode Island, but what allows us to be able to do the care that we have been accoladed for is, first of all, our focus is on the community, which is where we want to keep consumers. And treating someone in the community will, we believe, allow their social determinants of health to be met, their behavioral health and medical needs. Healthcare is extremely local. So again, we're gonna be relying on the local providers in Rhode Island to help us with this. We want to make sure that folks' environmental needs are met, their local, again, community supports, which may be formal and informal. And we want to make sure that if an individual needs acute care, we can do that both in their home, and we have an innovative program in Massachusetts that uses community paramedics to provide emergency department level services in someone's living room. So that's number one, the community focus. The second is the seamless integration of all of these things happening at once. So, and what I mean by that is the delivery of care, the coordination of care, and the partnership that we have with the community providers, because these folks that we believe we will serve in Rhode Island will have some needs. And we want to make sure that there are no gaps in their care needs, that we address all of their public health needs, all of their social determinants again. And some of the ways you fill in the gaps is by arranging and paying for transportation, managing someone's prescription medications when they're taking maybe more than eight a month, making sure that, again, the medical and behavioral health services that are being delivered are being coordinated with one another. And those providers are aware, again, of all these other things that I had described. And then the last thing is we bring a spirit of innovation to address members' unmet needs. We use very advanced predictive analytics to make data-informed decision-making. And again, all of the folks that I just described that are on this care team are able to get this information and use it to the individual's best interest. Again, we augment now direct care and in-home care with virtual care, telehealth, video conferencing, and of course, remote patient monitoring. So those are really the three ingredients that we think will make us unique, different, and hopefully, again, help us get those really high quality rankings that we've seen in Massachusetts.
Let's get into something that is obviously, I mean, it's in terms of healthcare, I mean, it's the story of the century, potentially. Obviously, COVID. If you can talk about CCA's approach and how you adapted to COVID-19. And then let's also get into the creation of the isolation and recovery sites in Massachusetts. Now, these were for COVID positive people from who were marginally housed and looking to recover from the virus. I mean, frankly, somebody who needed a place to go to recover is what that stands for. Can you kind of talk about that and why you got involved in that particular effort?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, I've been in healthcare for 26 years and have had the experience to serve during other crises. So I was involved in an organization that was charged with part of the cleanup post 9/11. And we were a Brooklyn-based organization at the time and lending our nursing staff to help really deal with the aftermath of that tragic event. And then after that, 10 plus years after that, Hurricane Sandy impacted New York City, and the organization I was with at the time, the Visiting Nurse Service of New York, was a first responder and literally not only providing care to people, but knocking door to door for those that were really impacted. If you don't recall that, it was a time where people had great devastation in the Far Rockaways and in New Jersey and had no power and were just complete communities were destroyed. And we were the organization that was charged with helping respond to that. And, you know, I learned through both of those events how to run an incident command center. Visiting Nurse Service of New York at the time had over 20,000 employees, and how to navigate that, how to really take people's roles and transform them on a moment's notice so that they can be more effective in a time of crisis. So when COVID hit the United States, not when it came to Massachusetts, but we knew it was coming our way, we felt very prepared to respond. And of course, I wasn't the only individual inside of Commonwealth Care Alliance that had this experience with some of these situations. Others were involved in the response to Hurricane Katrina. And we, in January, started mobilizing ourselves. And I had said, as all of our organization, that, you know, our number one objective here is to put humans first. This pandemic is going to have very significant ramifications and will ultimately cause the death of many people. And we were very focused on our populations because they were so vulnerable to this. And we wanted to make sure that folks had great access to healthcare, that they were going to be able to rely on services that they needed when they needed them. And we wanted to make sure that the folks that were getting day-to-day things that were really making them sustainable in the community, we're not going to have a disruption in that. And with that, because I felt so confident that we had sort of solved the problem for our own consumers to the best we could, I went to the state and said, hey, I have experience. How can we help the Commonwealth of Massachusetts during a time of crisis. And they very quickly came back and said, we believe that individuals that are marginally housed or homeless who get impacted with COVID need a place to be treated that's not the emergency room or the acute care hospital, because one, their needs may not rise to the level of needing a ventilator or an acute care bed. However, they still need to be, they need dignified care. We need to stop the communal spread of COVID. And almost in an instant, the command center and the Secretary of Health, Mary Lou Sutters, decided that the way to treat these folks were to set up isolation beds inside of the community in hotels that the state would procure. And they asked our organization to oversee that operation. And the operation in total at its peak had over 600 beds in, I believe, 7 sites. And it still exists today. We're serving now about 50 people. But we've served over 2,000 in that initiative. And really through the last, what's now 12 months, it has freed up critical care access beds in the community hospitals that were able to be used for people that really needed to be hospitalized to fight COVID.
For a daily discussion on all things Rhode Island, join the Bartholomew Town Podcast Facebook group or follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Bill Bartholomew.
Of course, now we're on to another phase of COVID. We're well into it in some cases, vaccines. And in your case, you were the first health plan in Massachusetts that were vaccinating your own members. You've also had success in something that Rhode Island is currently struggling with, and that's the vaccination of homebound members or homebound folks. But you were able to prioritize homebound members, getting them the opportunity to get the shot. If you can kind of speak to all of that and what your goals are and what you may be able to bring to Rhode Island in that sector of the COVID response, both vaccines in general, but then particularly with homebound individuals.
Yeah, so I think it's important to pause and really think about the fact that we are finally at a place where there is a vaccine that Americans will have access to. I believe over 2 million Americans are getting vaccinated a day now. And I hope this is the end of what has been a really difficult going on 13 months. So I'm happy to say that, first of all, almost 10,000 of our own members have received at least the first dose of the vaccine. 90% of those folks are those living in nursing homes. And then 5,000 have already received the second dose. So we feel great about that. The challenge that you describe is that there are vaccine sites in the state of Massachusetts. And if you live in a nursing home, there was a program that brought vaccine to your place of residence. But there are also individuals that are not able to get out of their own home for a variety of reasons and go to a vaccination site. They will need to be vaccinated in their own home. And that's something that we have been very, very focused on. And we are now vaccinating between 20 and 40 members a day. And by the end of April, we believe we will fully vaccinated every one of our individual members who can't get out of their house and have opted to be vaccinated. So we feel great that we have resolved this problem for our own members. And we think there are, thousands of people that meet that qualification. In addition to that, we have been working directly now with the state of Massachusetts, our Commonwealth, to coordinate their entire statewide effort to make sure that every homebound individual that wants to be vaccinated can receive the vaccine at home.
That's super impressive. The logistical challenges of that are enormous, and just connecting the dots between person A who's homebound and person B who's homebound, and how do you get, once the shot's taken out of the freezer, how do you get a batch of shots to a group of people who are homebound? That's a significant challenge. So I commend you for that. Moving away from COVID though, why Rhode Island? What is the big advantage that you see? What's the play, and why is Rhode Island the right fit for your particular model?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we believe that our approach to care and the demand for choice in Rhode Island creates a perfect opportunity. There are consumers that have similar profiles to those that we've been serving well in Massachusetts. And we believe that the very model of care that you and I talked about at the beginning of this episode is one of the best in the country. We've been rated as such. We've proved that we can get the results. And we do want to take that to Rhode Island because there are consumers there that can benefit from it.
What will Rhode Islanders see in terms of a workforce and also in terms of a physical presence from CCA?
Well, there's a couple things. As I said, we are looking to hire individuals that are in Rhode Island to work in Rhode Island. We are going to have an office presence. Obviously, that all of that is different now when we think about office space post-pandemic, but we will have a presence in Rhode Island. Our approach is again at the local community level. So we believe that first of all, Rhode Islanders will have a new employer that we believe they can call on if people are interested in coming to do the work that we feel so strongly about. We look forward to working with the provider community because again, healthcare is local, and we want to leverage the great provider community to practice the whole person care that we've been describing. That's all going to be hands-on. We have no plans to be a Massachusetts organization with a Rhode Island presence. We want to be a Rhode Island organization with a Rhode Island presence. And all of that is going to be done with the right investments in the communities of Rhode Island. And that's already been underway. We've been building relationships with the provider communities now for about 9 months. And that will continue in perpetuity. We will continue to build those relationships and strengthen those relationships. I think, again, giving people choice, really leveraging the healthcare ecosystem. We believe that we can create a very positive economic impact. That is the creation of jobs. We were named a top place to work in Massachusetts by the Boston Globe this past year. And we think that that's really important to be an employer of choice. So I'm super excited about that, and we'd like to be able to be that type of employer in Rhode Island as well.
Last question, touching on that ecosystem, which is ever changing everywhere, but particularly here in Rhode Island right now, we've got hospital mergers, major players merging. We've got the closure of some mental health facilities or the restructuring thereof, and just sort of a dynamics change with, the emergence of telemedicine on a more mainstream level. So taking your high-risk individual community-level approach of providing care, can you sort of touch on how that particular mission is going to be, what it brings to the larger healthcare ecosystem here in Rhode Island, even as things are shifting? You're bringing something that maybe nobody else is doing, or they're not doing as a. It's not something that people think of as what they're doing at minimum.
Yeah, I mean, look, I would say that it's going to be really, really critical. And when I think about things that are going on in the Rhode Island community that I don't have strong feelings for, but I've been watching around, for example, the Lifespan Care New England proposed merger. The thing that I love about that is the commitment of those organizations to the communities that they serve, as well as the commitments to address inequities in social determinants of health and working towards eliminating health disparities. So now when you think about that and you think about the pivot to how you leverage accessing consumers or consumers accessing you, it's going to be in a variety of ways. You will have consumers, we hope, that will return to some of a more traditional healthcare delivery setting like we experienced, again, 13 months ago. But at the same time, to continue to promote the consumer engagement that we've seen during the pandemic and them accessing non-traditional channels of healthcare, my sort of real excitement is that not only do you have the community's commitment in Rhode Island to addressing social determinants and doing away with the inequities and eliminating health disparities, now we have a multi-pronged approach by which we can tackle those problems that includes not having to walk into someone's office to get that done, to actually do it in someone's home, to be able to connect in a variety of ways with consumers, whether they have a smartphone or whether they have a basic telephone, whether they have internet or not. And I think it's that sort of continued engagement and partnership across the healthcare landscape in Rhode Island that is ultimately going to drive a better experience for the consumer and better outcomes for their health and overall well-being.